Welcome to another episode of Nerd Tweener Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Nerd Tween. Thank you so much for joining me. This is going to be an all wrestling special. So if you're not into wrestling, you're probably not going to like too much of what's going to be talked about today. So feel free to return next week when I talk about comics and things like that. Or maybe movies, who knows. But today, we had one hell of a weekend. If you're a professional wrestling fan, you had both AEW going head-to-head with WWE on Saturday. We had AEW selecting to go with both Rampage and Collision head-to-head with the WWE Premium Live Event Survivor Series War Games. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. If you like multi-fandom content, if you like wrestling, comic books, movies, pretty much anything you can nerd out about, this is your place to be. So give me a follow here on YouTube, TikTok, wherever you're seeing this. I also do the audio version as well, available on most podcasting platforms. Now, with all that being said, I want to first talk about the elephant in the room when we talk about CM Punk. So if you don't know, CM Punk returned last night at Survivor Series War Games in Chicago after the end of the men's War Games match. Slightly after the return of Randy Orton, which is something we'll get to later. But let's talk about CM Punk. I am not a fan of CM Punk personally. I've always stated that. I understand what he can do in terms of, you know, numbers and ticket sales and all of that. I understand how he brings with him this inherent necessity to watch because you never know what he's going to say. I get all that from a, you know, from the WWE standpoint, from why AEW signed him. I get all that. But as a wrestling fan, I'm not really too big a fan of his. I obviously his pipe bomb and his work on the mic is great. I have no problem with that, but I just think he's overrated in the ring personally. And again, this is my personal opinion. I don't need anyone to agree or disagree with that. That's how I feel. Because if we're talking about strictly in ring, I don't think he moves the needle as much as a lot of people seem to think. But CM Punk returns now. If you remember, there have been some comments that CM Punk basically talked all the shit in the world about WWE while he was with AEW. And I'm sure it's going to be very similar when now that he's back in WWE when he drops his first promo and probably drops AEW or Tony Khan's name directly. But I personally think that, I mean, it's going to be, I don't think there's any real downside for the WWE to sign him. I mean, it's the WWE. If he throws a tantrum and they fire him, nothing changes. But if he does not and he delivers, you know, his best work, I mean, you know, never know what's going to happen. I will say this with 100% certainty with my whole chest. The last time we saw him in AEW going against Samoa Joe, he looked like an old man that did not want to wrestle anymore. He looked like an old man that wanted to retire. When he came out last night at Survivor Series, he looked phenomenal. I mean, he really does look like he might be in the best shape of his life. I always thought that it would be interesting for him to come back because, I mean, he's a big name. So, like, he could potentially be thrown right into a feud with any of the top of the card, mid card, doesn't matter. He's going to make it amazing, you know, matches with them regardless. He just does that. But this, his return also kind of puts a fine point and an exclamation point on my opinions of why I didn't think that Solo should be the one to retire John Cena. Now, again, I understand that the reason why it happened was because the writer's strike was over and he had to go get surgery. And there's a whole bunch of things that you know, behind the scenes why that happens. You know, I get that. You know, that's not what I'm talking about. But, like, if you look at this from a storytelling point of view, the fact that it was Solo who did it, I don't think it really does much to move the needle for Solo. I mean, he's already the enforcer of the bloodline. He's already been protected and hasn't lost very many times at all since he's been called up to the main roster. And I feel like they could have done something a little different so that maybe Cena could do a promo, you know, while not being at the WWE, you know, to do it. But it's whatever. But it would have been really nice to have someone like CM Punk potentially retire him because of the great matches that they've had and the storylines that they were able to do. So I think CM Punk is a positive for WWE. There's very little downside, except maybe, you know, not getting back their, you know, a high enough ROI, or, you know, depending on how much they had to pay him to get him to come back. And who knows, maybe he didn't take a lot of money. I don't know. I that's not something I have any privy to whatsoever. So that will be something we'll have to look at a later date once that's released. But yeah, CM Punk, definitely. It's like I said, it's a very low risk, very high reward, because one thing that you can say, CM Punk has a rabid and loyal fan base that can single-handedly bump up ratings just because they're watching. I mean, why would the WWE not take a chance on that? There's no reason for them not to. AEW had to cut him because of what was going on backstage. And I've seen a lot of people, and I am starting to lean towards agreeing that maybe Punk kind of did this on purpose. Maybe he signed with AEW, was like, yeah, this is going to be great, and then changed his mind and realized it wasn't, but he had this long contract he had to honor, so he got himself fired so he could return to the WWE. Now, is that possible? Sure. Would I put that past CM Punk? Absolutely not. But yeah, it definitely, I think it was a smart move. Now, the only thing I have, my biggest complaint is, why did you have to upstage Randy Orton to do so? The entire premise, Randy Orton's going to be there, but he hadn't shown up once yet. Okay, and the argument that the WWE is making is that, oh, it came together at the last second. Randy Orton didn't show up to the last second. So unless the contract was signed after Randy Orton made his late entrance into the War Games match, then that excuse is absolutely null and void. Because if you knew, why not, even if he didn't do much, like let's be honest, Randy Orton looked great, but he didn't do much but a few snap suplexes and a few RKOs. And a couple of his draping DDTs, which is fine. I'm not complaining. I think he looked amazing, and I'm so happy that Randy Orton is back. I really am. But they were able to ease him in this War Games match and not have him work an entire match. You know what I mean? He did a couple spots, and that's all you needed from Randy Orton for your first time back right now. Perfect. Beautiful. Love it. Literally minutes later, CM Punk's music hit, completely shutting down this really great thing that they had with the War Games match and Randy Orton's return, which we'll get to in a little bit. And, you know, whether or not it's real, there are videos surfacing of Seth Rollins basically losing his effing mind and basically saying, I'm going to go knock his ass out. Whether it's real or not, and that's the thing that helps. See, and I talk about this all the time when we talk about wrestling. When wrestling is at its best, is when the line between scripted and real gets blurred. CM Punk is a catalyst for real life heat. A lot of people in real world don't like him. So it makes it easier to portray that we all hate him vibe. Because some of them actually do. So WWE has a very interesting opportunity here, because if Seth Rollins does have beef with him legitimately and wants to start a program with him, maybe over the world title? I mean, how insane would that be? And not for nothing, but do we know if CM Punk gave back the real AEW championship? You know, the one that he did his ex over? Do we know for certain? I don't think we do. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen with CM Punk coming back, which is great. I love the when there's competition because it breeds better content. And that's my segue into the second part of this. AEW, is AEW in trouble? Maybe. I don't think the CM Punk signing has anything to do with whether they're in trouble or not. That's over. What I'm worried about is that AEW, or at least I'll say this, Tony Khan seems hell-bent on challenging the WWE. To be successful, you don't have to beat the WWE. Just staying in existence is beating the WWE. Because they have always, always tried to stomp out any competition. You're playing into their game by doing things like they decided to run Rampage and Collision as a 3-hour block directly against Survivor Series. And I just finished watching it. This is, you know, the day after, and I just finished watching AEW Rampage and Collision because I mean, after watching the premium live event, I was spent, you know, and I think that was a mistake. Now, granted, to my understanding, DVRs count as views, so that, like, it doesn't really hurt, you know, that they went up side by side if people are just going to DVR and watch it like I did. So, you know, I mean, that's that, you know, you can make that argument, but why? The shows were fantastic. Rampage and Collision were great. You had a title change. You had some fantastic matches. You had the storylines between the House of Black and FTR being pushed even further. Then you had a couple fantastic qualifier matches for their new tournament they got going on. I mean, besides the ending to the main event, but that's something I'm going to get into in a second. But yeah, I think that instead of just trying to deliver a great show, because I mean, this tournament, it's a round robin tournament, you know, where a win gets you 3 points. There's a time limit for each match. So if you reach the time limit, no winner, each person gets one. If you lose, you get zero. And you're not eliminated. So the matches continue. And these are some great people. I mean, we've got Brody King, Eddie Kingston, Switchblade Jay White, Roosh, Jay Lethal. I'm going to forget some people because I'm going off the top of my head. Andrade, El Idolo, Daniel Garcia, John Moxley. I mean, you've got Daniel Bryan. Bryan Danielson, as he goes by in AEW. This is a stacked tournament, and it's going to create nothing but great matches, and it has so far, and you're wasting it trying to compete with the WWE. You've got something that WWE doesn't have. You have three promotions working together and creating a triple crown, a United States modern triple crown. And you're going head-to-head against Survivor Series? What the fuck for? There's no... I don't understand the thought process here. Did you really think that people were going to go, let's not watch the premium live event for 3 hours of this, of a regular TV show? No. And I mean, I didn't look at the numbers, but I'm sure WWE crushed them. I mean, it seems like Tony Khan is hell-bent on going head-to-head, and it's not a wise move. You run your own race. You don't worry about what the other what your competition is doing. You just keep doing you, making sure. And that's what the WWE has been doing for all these years. Yes, they will pay attention, and yes, they will try to, you know, purchase the competition so they don't have any. But the WWE is a WWE. In most cases, they don't comment at all about other promotions. which is a credit to them and also a downfall because they can't create a triple crown like AEW can. The way AEW works with the independents and New Japan and ROH, and I mean, granted, ROH is owned by Tony Khan, but that's it's another promotion in general that has its own fan base. You've got these three companies working together to create this amazing tournament, and it doesn't seem like that's your focus. The focus seems like I'm going to try to one-up the WWE. You can't. I know Tony Khan has a lot of money. I know that they can throw millions and millions and millions at it and hope it works. That's what WCW did. Hey, quick question. Is WCW still around today? No, that's right. It didn't even fail. It was bought out outright by the WWE and then dismantled and just taken apart. I don't want to see that happen to AEW. And I think AEW is definitely starting to go down that road that I hope that the same road WCW went on, where they just kept throwing millions and millions at it and just forgot that it's all about what happens in the ring and the stories that make those matches important. They had just started telling better stories, and then all of a sudden, it seems like Tony Khan's getting in his own way. I am worried. Like I said, I'm worried about the future of AEW because I enjoy thoroughly AEW, and AEW is a very different product than the WWE. AEW is more strong style and closer to, you know, what the indies and the, you know, New Japan style is, which is a different market, which is fine. I enjoy both that and the more entertaining, quote-unquote safer, I'm saying it's safer, side of wrestling like WWE product is. And I say this all the time, even when I'm talking about Marvel and DC, if you look at the DC extended universe, you want that to be as good as possible, even if you only like Marvel, because if they're good, that will make Marvel need to be even better versus Marvel being able to do whatever the hell they want because they don't have competition. Competition makes better content. Always does. There's no ifs, ands, buts about that, especially in terms of entertainment, because you want to try to do better than the next. You know, and I feel, and you look at like how the DC, they tried to do the MCU plan in a different way and it didn't work because they didn't just try to make good stories for themselves. They were trying to one up the MCU and they speed through it. You can't do that. I mean, it just doesn't work. These are properties that take time to build. You know, these are stories. These are stories. And I just hope that AEW does continue to exist for the next 20 years. Because that is, I mean, if AEW just becomes another one of the wrestling promotions that just didn't work because either WWE bought them or crushed them, it doesn't give the WWE much incentive to fight fair or even play nice. Because it's just sad because the talent they have in AEW is phenomenal. They just signed Will Ospreay, who is arguably the best living wrestler right now, performing in ring, arguably. He can do any style, whether it's the high flying, the technical. I mean, he's had like absolute bangers against so many people. It's like you go up against Ospreay and you're guaranteed the match of your life. That's amazing. You want that in your promotion. And then with the rumors that MJF has silently signed on, you know, to continue on, the bidding war of 2024 is no more. The bidding war of 2024 is no more. Ooh, I like it. But yeah, it definitely, there's a lot of promise and a lot of future dream matches that can happen in this promotion. Don't even forget, people like Swerve Strickland, who the WWE let go, And Swerve is a 150 million% a top tier talent. Oh, Swerve's in that tournament to be the first Triple Crown. I don't think he's gonna get it because I think he's going after the world title soon. But they've got so many great talents in AEW that I would be and who would not be able to be them in WWE. Like, I was hoping and praying that Will, like, so as a fan of Will Ospreay's character, I was hoping he would stay either New Japan or AEW because of his style, because he wouldn't be able to do a lot of the moves that he does. His moveset would have to change completely in the WWE because they're a lot safer. And you know, as someone who is a human and appreciates all that the wrestlers sacrifice, I was hoping he would go to WWE so that they would make him tone down and maybe so he can have a much longer career and make a whole bunch of money while he's doing it. But I'm happy that he's in AEW because he'll be able to be the aerial assassin like he is meant to be. Will Ospreay is all late, bruv. That's a good sign. Very good sign. Ning. Very good signing. But if you pair him with MJF, you've got the cornerstones of a company that can run for the next 10, 15 years. Like, with them two at the top. It's scary how good they could be. So I'm hoping that we get to see that 10, 15, 20-year mark with AEW. And they don't capsize like WCW did. Okay, now let's. There's one more thing I want to talk about before we move on to the WWE portion, the review of Survivor Series. There has been a uptick in botches on the referees, and this is no different than any other sport. I mean, you look at some people like Angel Hernandez in Major League Baseball. Dude is known to be one of the worst at calling a game. You look at, you know, in the NBA and the NFL, people miss calls all the time. I get that. But more and more I've seen where the referees just kind of call the match as they know it's supposed to end versus putting on a show that it's real. The masterful thing that wrestling can do is while we all know it's scripted and quote unquote fake, which it's not, it's very real, it does hurt. I mean, anyone who tries to say that wrestling is fake, I would ask you to take a tsunami from Bronson Reed. I would say go get power bombed by the Ring General. I would say go get hidden bladed by Will Ospreay. Go watch one Darby Allin match and tell me that it's fake. With the way he's getting thrown around, you can see it. This is not it's not fake. It's scripted. But when if you're gonna go for a pin count, one, two, three, can you check to make sure the shoulders are down at all? I've seen it way too much as of late, where. And I just and the reason why I'm mentioning it now is because we just saw at the end of Collision, Brody King and Eddie Kingston had an amazing match. It was so good. There was moments when you thought Brody was gonna win. There was moments when you thought Kingston was gonna win. Hell, you thought Kingston was like knocked out three or four times, and then it ends with a pin count that wasn't a pin. Eddie Kingston's entire body was shifted and laying on top of Brody King's leg. His left shoulder was not touching the mat at all until after the third one was rang and the bell sounded, and Brody moved his leg, and you can literally see his shoulder just drop to the canvas. It's not hard for them to look first and go, "Oh, look, his shoulder's not down." Brody moves his leg, shoulders down. One, two, three. Takes an extra 3 seconds. There's no excuse for that. And it happens a lot. And I understand I'm not blaming the ref specifically, like, oh, it's his fault that they didn't have. No. I'm just saying this is a trend that is happening a lot in wrestling. And I'm hoping that they can remedy it, and, you know, at least to the some extent. I mean, when you look at, you know, errors, human errors, they happen. I get that. And part of the storytelling of wrestling is tricking the referees into not paying attention while you do something shady. You know what I mean? So it's inherently deceitful in and of itself. So for me, I get that. And I understand it's not easy to, you know, draw the line there. I understand. But in a big match like that, check the shoulder. Make sure it's actually down. Like, make sure it's not going to look comical when Brody moves his leg and his shoulder finally hits the mat. It's not an AEW problem. I just noticed it on AEW. but it's happened in WWE. It's happened all over. I mean, these things happen. I understand. But they're happening a lot more than I think is should be allowed, considering the fact that you know the outcome. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like it's a real, like, if you give Eddie Kingston enough time, he's going to kick out. That's the final combo. We know that's the end. Take the extra 3 seconds. Take the extra 3 seconds. That's all I'm saying. But that, like I said, that goes pretty much for everyone who watches, who is in wrestling. It's not just an AEW problem. I want to make sure it's very clear. It happens all. I mean, hell, Ronda Rousey got pinned a few years ago and her shoulders weren't on the mat either. So, you know, it's definitely not just a sole AEW problem. But I've noticed it last night. Well, technically a couple minutes ago. But from last night's episode of Collision, specifically in a big match for this big tournament that is really great. But you have the match end on something like that, kind of taints it a little bit, kind of, you know, puts a little shadow of sadness on it. Because it wasn't the ending. They didn't stick a landing. You know what I mean? You can have a great routine and it be a 5.0 and then you don't stick a landing. And it's a 4.0. And, you know, especially if you're going to go head to head with WWE, you can't have those mistakes. You can't. As simple as that. At least in my opinion. But now we're going to segue into Survivor Series. So, I was, you know, did my prediction special on Junkie, and it's also been uploaded to YouTube after the fact. I went 3-2. At least it was a winning record. Taking my overall to, I think it's 16-8, if I'm not mistaken. The only matches I predicted wrong were the IC title and the men's War Games match. I definitely thought The Miz was going to take it for many reasons. I stated in my prediction special, one of the biggest reasons is that Gunther can't travel outside the country. So there's a lot of premium live events that are coming up next year abroad that would not be able to have the Intercontinental Champion even present, not nevertheless even defending it. And with Roman Reigns and his limited schedule already, you're going to have the top two titles, two of the top four titles, you can say, just not possibly, not going to be there at all. And that's a problem. I also thought because, you know, it's time to put Gunther in the main event scene. Gunther should be challenging either Seth Rollins or Seth Rollins or Roman Reigns for the Universal titles. I mean, if he's not top five talent in the WWE right now, then please, in the comments, tell me who, give me five wrestlers that are ahead of Gunther in terms of prowess, in terms of abilities, in terms of, I mean, even as a heel, how over he is. I mean, people love Gunther, even though they're supposed to hate him. I mean, you look at some, you got like, and we got to talk about people who are actually full-time. Like, even though Cody Rhodes doesn't wrestle every week, he's on a show every week. Cody Rhodes, Seth Rollins. That's it. I mean, you can argue maybe Drew McIntyre. You can argue, you know, Roman Reigns, obviously, but he's not a full-timer. You know, who else is Gunther level? I mean, they've thrown pretty much everyone on Raw at him so far, besides, like, Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes, basically. And Cody Rhodes and him went toe-to-toe at last year's Royal Rumble. You know, they basically had their own match at the end of the Royal Rumble to decide who wins. You know, so, and if he enters the Royal Rumble, he's a favorite. Dude had the longest ever time in the Royal Rumble, if I'm not mistaken, last year. You know, he's the future. And to have him, continue his Intercontinental Championship reign, every single match that he has, every defense is fantastic. This match with The Miz was no different. He absolutely crushed it. I think that it could have been, it could have gone either way. I would like to see Miz take it for numerous reasons. One, to make him tied for the most Intercontinental Championship reigns of all time, helping further solidify him as a first ballot Hall of Famer, which The Miz absolutely is. Anyone disagrees, it does not know his whole story, does not know what he's accomplished in the industry and how that he's still relevant to this day. Guy was a reality TV star that no one wanted in the business, and here he is, what, 15 years later, still, you know, a two-time Grand Slam champion, the second most Intercontinental Championship reigns in the history of the business. I mean, guy, believe it or not, The Miz is a legend. He is, and he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. So, you know, I thought maybe they'd go that route. It's fine that they didn't. You know, I get it. But, and then I did predict the War Games match incorrectly, the men's War Game, because I was certain that Randy Orton was turning. He was going to come in, and they teased it. And then at the end, we'll get into that in a second, but they teased Randy turning on Jay. But then Jay basically saved him with a super kick, and they kind of let it all go, I guess. Because there was, you know, after CM Punk showed up, there is a clip surfacing of Seth Rollins, like, freaking out, like, looking like it's a legitimate rage that he's there and wants to go legitimately fight him. But in the background, you can see Randy Orton and Jay kind of just piecing things up and, like, doing a handshake. Like, I don't like that. And the ending to the men's War Games match, it was literally, all right, everyone, get in line. We're going to do everyone's finishers. And then we're going to do a super epic. JD McDonagh deserves a lot of praise for taking a RKO off the top of the cage. But yeah, it seemed formulaic. And then shortly after, you know, they teased the whole time, is Randy going to show? Is Randy going to show? He wasn't in the cage with them. And then his music hits right as Rhea Ripley's trying to cash in for Damian Priest to get the heavyweight championship. And then I hear voices in my head. And out comes the Viper. Great, amazing moment. He looked fantastic. He got in his spots. He helped the babyfaces win. But then moments later, you have CM Punk come in and literally just stand at the entranceway. That's it. And that was enough to upstage Randy's return. I think that was a mistake. I think it was a mistake, and we had to talk about that earlier, but I definitely think WWE fumbled the ball a little bit there. Hell, they could have even had CM Punk take out Randy Orton, or some mysterious person take out Randy Orton and then outwalk CM Punk. And he's like, I'll wrestle with you. You know what I mean? Like, that would have been so much better, and you wouldn't have ruined Randy Orton's return. You could have had him officially return on Raw calling out CM Punk. You know what I mean? Like, that would have been amazing. They obviously, this is my fantasy booking, and this is me. I don't run this company, so I don't have the 20, 30 years of experience running a wrestling and entertainment industry mega corporation. You know, so who the fuck am I to say that they did it wrong? I'm a nobody. But I still am going to give my opinion on it. I think that they definitely upstage Randy's return. I'm not too happy about that. But let's talk about the whole PLE as a whole. The women's War Games match was fantastic. When you have the quality of wrestlers in the ring, two rings, and a steel cage, it's going to be amazing. Io Sky with, I don't know what, Io Sky at one point in the match climbed all the way up the top of the cage, put a chain down to the outside where her teammate Dakota Kai with the still injured Dakota Kai hands up a trash can. She pulls it back up. She puts the trash can on top of her own head and then jumps off the top of the cage. That was insane. Then you had Charlotte doing a moonsault off the top of the cage. I mean, this match had a little bit of everything. And I think I was definitely wrong about Shotzi being in this match. I initially thought that Shotzi didn't belong. Not saying that she wasn't worthy of being in that. I just think that they were trying too hard to put Shotzi over in this feud. It culminated at War Games and it did very well. Her taking the miss and then coming back to still fight was something they don't do often, because she got missed it early and she still came back to fight. That shows a lot of heart and a lot of, and had some pretty good spots too. I mean, like, she did her thing. As well as the rest of the women in the matchup, I'm a little surprised at the outcome, how they did it, but it all makes sense because the rest of Damage Control is going to blame Bayley for the loss, which will start her getting kicked out of the group, which I think is a long time coming. A babyface turn for her is really a smart one right now, but it wouldn't be a true babyface. She'd be more like an anti-hero. She'd be like, all right, I'm no longer with them. I'm not a jerk anymore. I'm just going to kind of like, you know, like a Drew McIntyre for the women's side. That's a very good parallel. And you know, she did very well. The match was I thought was very good. Great way to open the PLE. I was very impressed. And we're going to go a little bit out of order here, but Dragon Lee and Escobar, fantastic. Dragon Lee is the future of Lucha Libre, as Rey Mysterio has pointed out. But you know who's the here and now for heels in the WWE when it comes to the SmackDown brand? It's Santos Escobar. Santos is a great heel, and I'm so happy they're finally going this route and letting him be this guy, because him as a babyface was getting so stale. I mean, we want to see him win, but you didn't let him win, and you had him like just kind of play second fiddle to his icon. This turn was a long time coming, but it's very well done in the same breath. I think it's a little weird, though, that they had it as be Carlito initially, only for him to injure Carlito and then have Dragon Lee step in. I mean, I feel like Dragon Lee versus Santos was always the way to go, but they forgot about it and then decided to shoehorn it in this way. Because now they're going to have they're saying that Carlito's out for a few weeks now. So, I mean, maybe that's just so he can, you know, get a break or whatever, whatever. He's only wrestled a couple matches, so I don't know what the plan is there, but okay. And then, you know, you look at this entire PLE, there was only 5 total matches, and I don't know if that was necessarily a good thing. I mean, there was no LA Knight, no Solo, no Paul Heyman. It seemed more of a Raw PLE than the traditional War Games, besides the fact that the women's War Games was all SmackDown and one and Becky Lynch. You know, it definitely felt more of a PLE for Raw than anything else. I mean, because Rhea Ripley defending her title, Gunther defending his title, the only two title matches that were on the card were both Raw titles, you know, and the main event, all Raw talent. It definitely felt one-sided. There was a lot of forced, like really, really forced commercials, I'm going to call them, in the PLE with Chad Gable and the Alpha Academy and the New Day. More props to them. I mean, they're making that money. I get it. But I mean, granted, we did get R-Truth back. Yeah, R-Truth. That's the big headline. Screw CM Punk. Screw Randy Orton. It's R-Truth. That is the comeback of the century. You know, and I love Tozawa, and I love the Pretty Deadly Yes Boys. And you know, Otis is great as ever. It just felt like a lot. And you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Again, they're trying to make their money, and you know, the more money they bring in, the better they can do, and yada 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 yada. I get all of it. I'm not mad at it. But it does seem to be a trend in all of wrestling right now that, like, I don't remember there ever being commercial breaks in the middle of matches. Commercial breaks in between entrances. There's a lot of commercials now, and I've got to the point where I don't watch Raw, SmackDown, Dynamite, Collision, Rampage live anymore. I literally have them recorded and start them a half hour to an hour late just so I can fast forward through commercials because there's so many of them. And then apparently it's not enough because that was the reason that Fox decided to not renew their deal with WWE because the ad revenue wasn't enough. What more do you want from them? Like, there could be three commercial breaks. But it's, when Roman Reigns comes out, his 25-year entrance, there could be three commercials. His music hits, he comes out, commercial. You don't see him walking slowly, and then back in, he's just now making the ring. He puts his finger up, commercial. And then he comes back, and he starts talking. Like, come on. This is a premium live event. We're paying a monthly subscription to watch this, you know, I mean, I just, maybe it's not like AEW where they charge $50 a pay-per-view, but they at least give us 10 matches and make us go, okay, that was worth $50. I don't know, man. There's a lot of things that are concerning me when it comes to wrestling. Won't make me stop watching. All it'll make me do is maybe complain a little more here. But what we're going to be doing moving forward is I'm probably going to end up having a wrestling channel, Nerdtween Wrestling. You might see the hashtags already across, you know, TikTok and Twitter and all the other, well, sorry, X. But I, you know, will we have full WWE 2K Universe coverage? I have, let's see, two episodes for each of my five brands leading up to a pay-per-view that I'm going to do live commentary for. So we'll probably be seeing a new channel coming soon. If you've made it to this point in the show, it's 43 minutes in. You listen to me talk about wrestling by myself for 43 minutes. I appreciate you very much. If you are at this point of the show, do me a favor and just comment 43:37. And only people who will know what that is, I mean, people might just start saying it, but 43:37. I appreciate you very much. But yeah, overall, I would say that the Survivor Series War Games PLE was a very solid pay-per-view premium live event. It did not top Full Gear, in my opinion. Even with the returns of Randy Orton and CM Punk because of how they did it. I understand Triple H's thought process, in less matches, giving them more time to breathe. But if you're doing a premium live event, five matches isn't enough, even with two War Games matches. It's just not. Like, for instance, if I would have paid $50 for that, like, if I would have paid $50 as if they had to start going to that model, I would be very upset. I'd be pissed. Like, that's all I got? Really? You know, so that's something that the WWE will have to look into. I mean, I don't know if that matters to them because of what they're doing with, you know, revenue and after the merging with TKO. I'm sorry, with MMA becoming TKO. So who knows where this will go, but it's definitely a good time to be a wrestling fan because of AEW trying their hardest to compete with WWE and WWE taking notice and upping their game in spots to make sure that they are the premium company in the world. We will see how this all plays out, both with the CM Punk drama and with Tony Khan's seeming unrelenting need to compete head to head and potentially lose viewers than just, you know, doing good stuff on your own time slot. I just don't get why you would move purposely. Oh, let's see. We can either run Rampage, you know, by itself at its normal time slot after SmackDown, or we can move it to go head to head to a premium live event. Let's move it to go ahead against the premium live event. Come on. Bush League. But thank you so much for listening. This is Nerdtween signing off. Until next time, you stay nerdy, my friends.